Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Medicare Advantage Update Conference Call. Today's conference is being recorded. With us today, we have Mr. Tony Hausner and Mr. Craig Miner, both with CMS. Please go ahead, Mr. Hausner.
Okay, Janice, should we start?
Yes, please go ahead.
Okay. So I'm going to talk about the quality improvement requirements for Title II, the Medicare Advantage program. And Craig will talk about the quality assurance requirements for the prescription drug benefit. And I guess that really covers most of what's in the first slide, on which I've labeled as focus. I think the other thing I want to highlight is a statement that our administrator, Mark McClellan, has put forth, labeling our agency a public health agency, and that's certainly developing in a number of ways. Quality is getting a great deal of attention in our agency, so I think he's really fulfilling his statement regarding that, and I think that has a great deal of implications for quality of care, as well as expansion of preventive services and related activities. So let me go to the next slide. I'll focus most of the talk on HMOs and PPOs. There are three major areas of requirements: the chronic care improvement projects, the quality improvement projects, and then performance measures that are reported. And I particularly referred you to the final rule that we published in January of 28th of this year. Both look at the rules and the discussion in the preamble on subpart D. Okay. Going to the next slide, the chronic care improvement program or projects requirement. You all know it as disease management, and many of you have been doing this for a number of years. What we've put into the regulations is pretty much what was in the legislation, that all of these programs have to have methods for identifying persons with chronic conditions, and you have to have mechanisms for monitoring the services that they receive. In the call letter, and we'll also be putting this into the manual that will be the manual chapter for Chapter 5 will come out probably sometime this fall. In the call letter and in the manual, we specify some reporting requirements related to CCIP, and all we're asking for in this, at the end of 2006, is what diseases have you served, what services have you provided, and then the types of performance measures that you're using. We're not asking for the actual data, we're just asking for the types of measures that you're using. Okay. Continuing with the next slide, one of the areas that we put into the preamble, we suggest, just for guidance, is to look at the Chronic Care Improvement Program pilot projects that are being done under the Section 721 of the Medicare Modernization Act. And we reference that not as requirements, but just for your information to give you further insights as you think about these programs. I should also mention, and we'll be putting this into the manual, and we made brief mention in the preamble, you might want to look at the Disease Management Association of America has quite a bit of material on their website, and that's there for guidance. Suggest that you look at that to, you know, further educate yourselves about what's going on in the field, and you know, it's your discretion whether to use that information, but it's there that we provide that for your information. We are interested in your input on what directions we should go with this program, what kind of requirements we might want to have, what kind of technical assistance, any other suggestions you have for how we might further develop this. We felt that we put minimal guidance because we knew that you guys were the experts in running these kinds of programs, and we have lots to learn from you all about it before we do anything further, either in the way of guidance or in the way of technical assistance. Go to the next slide, the quality improvement projects. They used to be called QAPI, quality assessment and performance improvement projects. So you've been doing these for a number of years. We've just changed the title as a result of the legislation. In the past, we had a mandatory national project. The new regulations indicate that you are the ones who choose the projects. It's to be determined by the plan. However, I'll talk in a minute about a national voluntary project. Some of the requirements for quality improvement projects are that you have measures of performance for both clinical and non-clinical areas, that these involve systems interventions, that they improve performance, and that you have periodic follow-up on the intervention effects. On the next slide, we indicate that we expect you to assess performance using quality indicators that are objective, that they measure outcomes, collect valid and reliable data. Interventions must achieve demonstrable improvement, and you provide reports to CMS. As I indicated, there's no longer mandatory national projects. We'd like to encourage your participation in voluntary national projects. We hope to either this year or next year provide some national projects that you can choose whether or not to participate in. We'll try to provide as much guidance on that as possible, and we welcome your input on what kinds of national projects we might want to work together on. Let's turn to the next slide on performance measures you're reporting on. As all of you are hopefully familiar with HEDIS, CAPS, and HAAS, those are the performance measures that we currently are collecting. For those types of performance measurement systems are required for all HMOs and PPOs, except for some kinds of special needs plans, the SNPs, which I'll talk about in a minute. For the CAPS and HAAS, those are identical for HMOs and PPOs. On the next slide, performance measure reports for HEDIS, I want to point out a distinction. For PPOs, in the initial years, all we're requiring is administrative data, but we hope to, over time, collect medical records data from the PPOs as well. We felt that in the first couple years with a lot of these new regional PPOs, since they're kind of in the process of just building up their systems, we didn't want to be also requiring them to implement medical record data systems that they haven't been doing before. But we hope to move fairly quickly over time to be getting medical records data from them as well. For HMOs, we'll continue to collect administrative and medical record data. All right, the next slide on performance measure reports are the special needs plans. For the dual eligibles, I should backtrack for a second. All special needs plans will still have to do with the chronic care improvement projects and the quality improvement projects. But the performance measure reports will differ for the special needs plans. For dual eligibles, they will still do the HEDIS, CAPS, and HAAS. For the institutionalized, I'll make a distinction, those that are in nursing homes versus those who are in community-based that need an institutional level of care. For the nursing home-based ones, we're expecting plans to submit something like the nursing home minimum data set, but it will be some variation on that. We'll also be expecting some hospital measures, and then we'll also be able to collect MDS minimum data set data for those populations from our regular MDS files and be able to compare those plans patients to average nursing home populations. For community-based institutional-level care, there will be some variation. It may be different than for the nursing home populations. And then we have the other types of plans, which are the chronic diseases, and we've gotten a wide range of chronic diseases that have been approved, from congestive heart failure, diabetes, ESRD, mental illness, developmentally disabled, brain injured, AIDS. We're going to be tailoring the measures, perhaps, to those different types of plans. Let me turn to the next slide just to talk about what are called coordinated care plans. Those are HMOs and local PPOs that have HMO licenses. For those plans, an additional set of requirements are that they have written policies for service authorizations, that they detect over and under utilization, and they use the same measures, HEDIS measures, as HMOs. So PPOs with HMO licenses would have to submit medical record data under the HEDIS program. And the next slide talks about all the plans, which would include HMOs, PPOs, private fee-for-service plans, and the medical savings accounts. All of them have to have health information systems, annual review of impact and effectiveness of quality improvement programs, and then remedial action on all problems that are brought to their attention. Let me talk about the next slide, which is future directions. We have the option, if we want to develop new measurement systems. Right now, HEDIS, CAPS, and HOS are the primary performance measure systems that we're using. If we want anything other than those, we would have to submit a report to Congress. I know one type of system that was brought to our attention in the comments on the proposed rule was the ACOF system developed by RAND. So that's something we'll think about. But right now, we don't have any current plans to introduce any new measurement systems and submit a report to Congress. One area that's getting a lot of attention in both around the country and in Washington these days is pay for performance. There's a discussion of that in the preamble to the final rule. CMS is conducting a number of demonstrations in this area with hospitals and physicians. The Medicaid Payment Assessment Commission has introduced legislative proposals for managed care using HEDIS and CAPS. And then Senate Finance Committee, Senators Grassley and Baucus, introduced on June 30th pay-for-performance legislation, I think it was called Value-Based Purchasing Act, that includes a whole host of fee-for-service types of providers, but also includes Medicare Advantage plans. And what we'd like to do is challenge you and other stakeholders to help us further develop standards, technical assistance needs, et cetera, in this area. So we look forward to your input. So now I'm going to turn it over to, on the last slide has my contact information. So now I'm going to turn it over to Craig Miner to talk about prescription drug benefit.
Thank you, Tony. If you're on the my first slide there, overview, I've laid out the five areas from the regulation that pretty much sum up the where the quality-related requirements are in the regulation. That is the sections entitled Quality Assurance Measures and Systems, Medication Therapy Management, which has received a lot of attention, and I'll probably go through that in a little more detail, Consumer Satisfaction Surveys, e-prescribing, and where that's headed and how that is intended to improve the quality of health care, and then also the role of quality improvement organizations with respect to the Medicare prescription drug benefit. I did just want to point out that the regulatory requirements in these areas apply to both MA plans as well as standalone prescription drug plans who are offering the prescription drug benefit. So if we go to the next slide, quality assurance measures and systems, the first requirement we have simply was to require that plans contract with network providers that comply with minimum state pharmacy practice standards. We had looked at, you know, whether we were going to further spell out specific standards similar to the OBRA requirements or not, but in the end we decided that it was best that we left that to the states, because the Part D benefit is primarily intended to regulate the plans and not regulate the practice of pharmacy. So again, while we wanted to ensure that plans, you know, were contracting with, you know, above board providers and stuff, we did not want to get into further regulating the practice of pharmacy, nor did we think we had the authority to under the Medicare prescription drug benefit. Secondly, one of the requirements for plans is that they conduct concurrent drug utilization reviews, sometimes referred to prospective drug utilization review, because it takes place before each prescription is dispensed. This is the current industry standard within the practice of pharmacy. Most pharmacies, if not all pharmacies, have systems to do this before they go ahead and dispense prescriptions, as well as when there's third parties involved, the PBMs have their own systems. Now, there are some issues there with duplication of efforts. So that does go on, but in general, all prescriptions before they are dispensed are run up against a set of system edits to ensure to check for things such as duplicate therapies, drug interactions, over and under utilization based on their utilization history, whether the dosage being prescribed is too high, things such as drug allergies. So that is a requirement for plans to have something in place and ensure that that's going on before each and every prescription is dispensed. Next, we also require plans to have established policies and procedures for retrospective drug utilization review, and this is a little bit different in its goal than the concurrent, where the concurrent is tied and looks at individually each prescription while it's dispensed. Retrospective is intended to be able to look back and perhaps determine inappropriate patterns of prescribing, maybe on a prescriber level possibly, or perhaps drug specific, or groups of drugs, or certain classes of drugs, and to be able to determine whether further action needs to be taken. Lastly, under this heading, we have internal medication error identification and reduction systems, and basically what this was is we did not establish a requirement for external reporting of medication errors. Part of that was due to the feedback that we received from many that in the industry that would actually, at this point, probably be more detrimental to the improving quality of care as opposed to helping it, because it was looked at that it might create situations where, you know, the reporting wasn't going to be the same across all companies. There was no standard for what we would be requiring to be reported and how that would be reported. So instead, what we went back to was just to say that individually, each plan needs to establish their own type of error reporting. And when we say reduction systems, they need to have policies and procedures in place whereby they look at or examine when errors take place and take an approach whereby they can look to see if they can prevent such errors from recurring. So we expect, oftentimes, I think this is part of what's considered a continuous quality improvement process, and that's what we were referring to when we expect that such process to include looking at medication errors and making sure you have an ongoing process to address whether there are systems or operational issues that could prevent their occurrence in the future. If we move on to the next slide, we begin to discuss medication therapy management under the new prescription drug benefit. Again, I said that this has received a lot of attention and still continues to receive quite a bit of attention. The pharmacy community, as you can imagine, is very excited about this and thinks that they're going to be given the opportunity to show you know, the value that they add to the healthcare team in addition to just dispensing meds. So if we go through the requirements, there's only a few requirements at this time specifically on the plans, the first being that each and every plan must have a program in place. And what we did require as of April 18th, and then I think we had a resubmission for the second week in June, was that each plan had to describe in detail what their program was. So we didn't have any requirements other than them having to meet the requirements with respect to who they are allowed to target and acknowledge that that's part of their MTM program. But we did require them to spell out exactly what they plan on doing. Secondly, each program, just based on the definition from the statute, must be designed to optimize therapeutic outcomes, either by improving medication use or reducing adverse drug events. And again, it is limited to targeted beneficiaries, and I'll discuss that in just a second. Third, the MTM services or services underneath the program can be furnished by either pharmacists or other qualified providers. We acknowledge, and I think many people assume, that pharmacists would be the primary provider of such services, but it isn't limited to only pharmacists, and we think that there are other qualified providers that could participate in programs, whether it's doctors, nurses, or other types of providers that would, depending on the specific program, be the most appropriate for providing those services. If we go to the next page to continue the requirements, each program had to be developed in cooperation with licensed and practicing physicians and pharmacists. Now, those could be employees of the plan or the organization that's putting forth the program, or they could have subcontracted out to a company who could have developed that program for them, as long as the development was done in cooperation with pharmacists and physicians. Next, with respect to services, because I think as many of you might realize, this benefit is much bigger than your typical outpatient prescription drug benefit, but encompasses patients that are in long-term care facilities. And since some of the services that could be of value in the ambulatory setting might not be of the same worth in another setting, in the institutional setting, for instance, just simple things that could help with adherence in the ambulatory setting might not be worth it in, or applicable, I guess would be the word, in the long-term care setting, the statute recognized that while the targeted, who they would target criteria would be the same across the board, the services that were offered could differ depending on the setting where the individual beneficiary is located. And finally, just with respect to fees that are established to pay providers for these services, if they're established, must reflect the time and resources required to provide such services. If we go to the next slide, we speak to this idea of targeted beneficiaries, and medication therapy management, if you will, the formal medication therapy management under the prescription drug benefit is limited to targeted beneficiaries. And those beneficiaries are those that have multiple chronic conditions, are taking multiple drugs, and are likely to exceed a cost threshold that was specified by CMS for 2006 at $4,000. And that $4,000 is the aggregate drug cost, not out-of-pocket cost. So it's the total adjudicated cost paid for both by the plan as well as the beneficiary. Now, beyond this, though, plans are free to further refine or target specific patients with specific multiple diseases, or patients taking, for instance, they could limit it to 5 or more drugs or 10 or more drugs. So the plans have the flexibility to further refine within these parameters who they're going to target. The only thing is that they have to meet, however they define each of these three elements, they have to meet all three. They can't just have one. You know, we've seen some that just want to say we want to target people with asthma. While that makes sense in a general idea of MTM, and I'm not trying to say that MTM wouldn't be valuable there, the statute was clear that the beneficiaries had to meet all three conditions, and that is something that programs under the Part D benefit will need to accommodate. On the next slide, I just provide some examples of what our understanding was at the time of writing the regulation, if you will, what MTM could be. These are not requirements, but were put there just for illustrative purposes that, we acknowledge that, patient health status assessments, what's been referred to brown bag or consultations, helping to formulate treatment drug plans, other education and perhaps training. Special packaging, that was mentioned in the statute, and certainly that might be something that's important to improve adherence or compliance in the ambulatory setting and could be factored into an overall program that a plan wants to put forth. But again, this isn't an exhaustive list, and there's many, many other opportunities, we think, for plans to define their medication therapy management program. Now, the next topic I'd like to touch on briefly is consumer satisfaction surveys, because that is something that will be performed with respect to the Part D benefit. CMS will conduct surveys to provide the comparative information about qualified prescription drug plans to enrollees. It's going to be similar to, I guess, what's done today under the CAPS. And if you look at it, we basically, for the first year, we'll be piloting the survey, and then it'll look to implement the formal survey in 2007. Next, I have a slide speaking to the electronic prescribing. And basically, the requirements there are that sponsors must support and comply with standards once final standards are effective. Now, initial final standards will be effective for 2006. There was a proposed rule put out in April, and the comment period has ended, and they're now working on finalizing that rule for three what they call foundation standards. And those standards are specifically the NCPDP script standard for the prescription elements, the NCPDP telecommunications 5.1 standard for the eligibility determinations between the dispenser and the plan, and then there's the ASC X12 standard for the eligibility determinations from the prescriber to the plan. Those final standards for 2006 are expected to be published this fall, perhaps as early as September. Now, with respect to further standards, CMS will be conducted pilot testing of additional standards, and we need to come to final standards for all the standards to be associated with the Medicare prescription drug benefit by April of 2008. So again, other than these three initial standards, additional standards will be piloted for now, and they will not be mandatory on all plans until they are published not later than April 1st, 2008. With respect to quality improvement organizations and their role in the prescription drug benefit, the regulations require the QIOs to offer providers, practitioners, and sponsors assistance with quality improvement. QIOs will also have access to specified information from CMS as well as Part D sponsors, although I don't have further information right now on what exactly that information is that's specified. And then, of course, the information collected by the QIO is subject to the confidentiality restrictions for that. Now, finally, I just wanted to mention that with respect to reporting requirements for Part D, there are final reporting requirements on our website that spell out the data that plans have to report to us with respect to some of these quality areas. Specifically, they have some reporting requirements with regards to medication therapy management, grievances, utilization management. Basically, some things we'll be looking at is how they utilize prior authorization, tiering exceptions, non-formulary exceptions. They also have to report on their appeals processes and some data elements for their customer service call center. And that is the extent of what I have.
All right, Janice, we're ready for any questions you all may have.
Does anybody have any questions in the room? We have Jeanette Flynn Weiss. She's from Preferred Care. You might have to come. Were you able to hear that, Tony?
No, we didn't hear anything.
Okay, the question was with regard to the local PPOs with the HMO license, and the fact that they would be required to submit the hybrid measures, which is both the admin and the medical record data, similar to the HMOs.
Right.
She asked if that would be phased in.
No, my understanding is that will be required immediately.
Any questions? Other questions in the room? That's it for here. Candace, can you see if there are any questions on the telephone line?
Thank you for our phone audience. If you do have a question or a comment, it is star 1. Again, if you do have a question or a comment, please press star 1. And it seems we have no questions.
Thank you, Candace. Tony and Craig, thank you very much.
I'm sure that folks will be in touch with you both if questions do come up in the future.
Thank you. Okay.
And we appreciate your time both today and yesterday.
Janice,
yes.
And Rosemary, we did send you that website for the reporting requirements. So that's in your email, and you can forward that then to the all the plans that you're dealing with.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye-bye then.
Thank you.
That concludes today's teleconference. Thank you all for your participation.